Welcome to our Holden Village podcast. For over 50 years now, Holden Village has traveled a rich history of faith that has transformed a copper mining town into a vibrant place of education, programming, and worship. Holden has sought to welcome all who seek contemplation and community in the remote wilderness of the beautiful Cascade Mountains. We continue to invite people of all ages to come alongside our rhythms, which inspire and equip travelers for a sustainable life of faith outside the village. And we continue to listen and reflect on our story and history and seek to discover our place in God's creative mission in our world. Our podcasts are a way of sharing our conversations with our teaching faculty around reformation, the reforming of our relationships with the earth, with each other, and with the divine. Let's tune in and join the conversation.
Hello, my name is Joe Siebert. I had the pleasure of being in the village this summer. I'm a retired professor of pathology from the University of Washington, but some of my graduate work and some of my research was done in evolutionary biology. I'm also a lifelong Christian and active at First Lutheran Church in Bothell, Washington. So hopefully this scientific background and my faith background give me some qualifications to speak about evolution and faith. Evolution, I'll just define as change in the natural world. We know that that happens. My concern is that evolution and faith are misunderstood. I think this brings confusion to the faith community, but also brings terrible distress to scientists and to other educators. So really, we have two enormous questions that I think as people we ask. Who are we as humans, and who is God, and how does God act? Science really informs, number one, who are we as humans, and faith informs, number two, who is God. But both can coexist. Now, people ask, do you believe in the theory of evolution? But this is a wrong question, because we know that evolution is real. We know that dinosaurs came and left. We know that penicillin no longer works for bacterial infections. In fact, a whole host of antibiotics don't work because bacteria evolved. We get a flu shot every year, and the reason is because the influenza virus mutates, and that really is evolution as well. So we can see that evolution happens. But the mechanisms of evolution are theoretical. So when we ask, how does change happen, that may or may not be known. This is what scientists postulate or hypothesize and work on. So we're always asking, what are the general patterns that describe evolution? So science is really about verifying theories through testing. Religion is not really testable, at least not in the scientific laboratory. Evolution is real, then. I can't emphasize that point enough. This fact is not at odds with major Christian faiths. You can go online and read the statements about evolution from major denominations. But, for example, the Evangelical Lutheran Church, the United Methodist Church, the Roman Catholic Church are all very accepting of the idea of evolution and make the point that it does not interfere with our faith. So as Christians, we recognize that God is creator. This is a fundamental point. It is lifted up in our creeds and our sacraments. The Apostles' Creed says, I believe in God the Father, creator of heaven and earth. The Nicene Creed talks about creator of all that is seen and unseen. Our baptismal rite states, in the beginning, your spirit moved over the waters, and by your word you created the world, creating forth life in which you took delight. Holy Communion makes the statement, we join in the hymn of all creation. So a theologian, Langdon Gilkey, lifted this up and said, really, creation is central to Christian confidence. That's such an important point, that God is creator, and this is really very important in our faith. So how does God create? Does God push the cosmic buttons and make things happen? Or maybe God creates by love. Well, what about the book of Genesis, right? The book of Genesis has been a thorn in the side of evolutionists for sure, but the book of Genesis is not a scientific textbook, right? If we look at the historical context of that book, it's based on hundreds of years of oral tradition. Genesis was written thousands of years ago. Chapter 1 and chapter 2 were probably written hundreds of years apart by different authors. Certainly no science was understood in those days, and nothing was understood about evolution for sure. So we can see Genesis really as a myth. It's full of stories that are true in a larger sense, but not necessarily in their small details. Genesis gets at these questions of who are we, who is God, how did that relationship become damaged? This interpretation is supported by mainline denominations, by scholars and theologians. So let me emphasize this. The Bible is not a scientific textbook, and at some level certainly we know that. When we use the Bible to explain science, we misuse the Bible. Evolution in God's world really should be exciting to people of faith. Religion supports the adventure of science, but we need to keep science and religion separate. This should not really be a problem for us. Robert Pennock made the point pretty dramatically. He said, science is godless the same way plumbing is godless. That's a good one, huh? Science is godless the same way plumbing is godless. Well, so this is evolution from a faith perspective. Let me spend a few minutes talking about how scientists actually study evolution. Many disciplines are used in that study, mathematics, chemistry, physics, biology, geology, genetics. The same science that's used to develop our automobiles or our airliners, to develop our chemotherapy or other drugs, that same science is used to study evolution. Well, a lot of things can influence evolution. Certainly environmental change can influence evolution. This gets at this issue of environmental justice, which Holden Village is emphasizing this summer. The study of fossils is critical. This is how we learn about past evolutionary events. Fossils need to be recovered carefully. They need to be dated. When you do that, when you establish dates for fossils, you find out that some species coexist. So evolution is not linear. One species does not necessarily turn magically into another species, but rather evolutionary change looks like a tree or even a complex bush. We can study evolution by looking at anatomy. We can look at the lumps and bumps on bones, and those lumps and bumps suggest to us where skeletal muscles insert. This gives us an idea of how ancient creatures moved. We can use the microscope and study the surface of teeth. This gives us ideas about the diet that ancient creatures had. We can now even recover DNA from some specimens. I'll give you just an example. In a recent paper, the DNA of Neanderthal plaque has been recovered. Now, we know we've got plaque on our teeth, right? We all know that, but you can actually analyze the DNA of that plaque and learn about the diet of people. One particular skull actually showed signs of an abscess and had DNA from bacteria that came from the GI tract, which suggested that that Neanderthal individual actually had diarrhea. That's pretty amazing, isn't it, to look at a 50,000-year-old skull and say that this person had diarrhea. You can find DNA of the poplar tree in this plaque, which suggests, and poplar has a derivative of aspirin, so it suggests that that ancient peoples were chewing on poplar, they were actually treating pain in this way. Lots of other new discoveries, too. You don't really recover the brain from fossil skulls, but you can study that skull by CT scans. This gives you a good idea of what the configuration of the ancient brain was like. We can study the other anatomical features, and for example, we can use the same anatomy book to study the ape or the human. The anatomical features are that identical. We can also get at this from genetics. We share certain proteins with the apes, and this cannot occur by chance. The mathematical probability of having identical proteins by chance is just virtually impossible. So this really suggests a common ancestor. One way to think about the genetics of a common ancestor would be to imagine for a minute your pastor's briefcase. Okay, that sounds like a goofy analogy, but stay with me here. We walk into church, you walk into church, you walk in with your pastor. The two of you, it turns out, are carrying identical briefcases. Now, you open up those two briefcases and you find that the contents of these two briefcases are identical. Well, no, that's just plain weird, right? Either the two of you are way too codependent, or possibly you were just at the same convention, right? And you both picked up a bunch of freebies and brought them home. So you've got the same stuff in your briefcases. Well, this really is how genetics works and how the genetic analysis of fossils works. if you have the same genetics, for example, just in a protein, that really means that you share a background, okay? And that's just a very, very important finding. We can then do calculations based on anatomic similarities or these genetic similarities. When you do that, the calculation suggests that the apes and the monkeys diverged from a common ancestor, that is, they evolved from a common ancestor, about 30 million years ago. When you do this for apes and humans, it looks like those two creatures diverged about 7 million years ago. Now, these dates will vary as more specimens are found and as dating techniques are more refined. Now, for sure, this is difficult to understand when we're talking about evolution that takes place over millions of years. Yeah, it's hard to get our minds around it, but I guess that's why we have scientists to help us with that. So let me take a minute and summarize. Evolution is a fact. It can be observed. The mechanisms of evolution are theoretical, but they can be tested. Such tests are conducted by a wide variety of scientific disciplines. These disciplines must, at some level anyway, match with each other so that they make sense. Evolution is ongoing, and new discoveries are commonplace. You'll see them when you follow the media. But all of this is really a picture of reality. It should not be threatening to people of faith. So, as people of faith, what do we do about evolution? What do we do about ongoing creation? This really gets at the idea of environmental justice, this concept of that we all share in the community of planet Earth. This is an important Holden Village theme this year. It's clear that we can influence evolution. We can make animals go extinct. The beaver was nearly extinct. The bison was nearly extinct due to human efforts. If you look around the United States, there are nowadays a lot of malformed frogs and other amphibians. This is really something that happens from environmental toxins. Other changes, we certainly know about climate change, and good Lord, let's not even talk about what a nuclear disaster would look like. So really, God's creation is ours to protect. Protecting creation is really a sacramental venture, right? A sacramental venture. That's an important point for people of faith. So let me just close with two quotes. The first one from the poet W.S. Merwin, published in 2016, a poem called The Present. As they were leaving the garden, and here we mean the Garden of Eden, as they were leaving the garden, one of the angels bent down to them and whispered, "I am to give you this," meaning to give them the world. I am to give you this as you are leaving the garden. I do not know what it is or what it is for, what you will do with it. Isn't that quite a powerful poem? People are leaving the Garden of Eden, you know, the angels lean over and say, "I don't know what you're going to do with this," right? Wow, and this is really how God turns the world loose and sort of says, "I don't know what you're going to do with this, but I hope you will be respectful of the fact that I give you this freedom." So let's let Scripture have the last word from Isaiah 43. "Do not remember the former things or consider the things of old. I am about to do a new thing." God is about to do a new thing, and God will always be doing new things. So remember this, if you will, please. Evolution happens. It's a fact. But this newness gives God great delight. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us for another Holden Village podcast. Be sure to view the links in the description for more information, or visit our website to find out more about the village. We hope you will make a pilgrimage to Holden. Blessings and peace to you.